Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with my good friend, Miss Nadia Keita. How are you, Nadia?
Hey, Mike. I'm all right. How you doing?
Good, good, good. How is your life going?
Exhausting.
Good,
Like,
very good.
yeah. But I think that's kind of what it's supposed to be like, right?
I mean, in capitalism, I guess.
For like middle class people like us, like, aren't we supposed to be exhausted all the time?
Right.
I think.
If you're not drowning, you're almost drowning.
Dark way to start this episode.
Yeah, I know. So today we're talking about a film that came out this year, 2023, called Skinamarink. Where did you first hear about this movie?
So I saw some, you know, one thing I hate about having a phone is that every app I have has some sort of stupid news or update that I have to see every day of my life. And one of those was a Skinamarink trailer from YouTube, because YouTube has to tell me what's going on all the time.
Yes, yes.
And I watched this movie, this trailer, and I'm like, this is bizarre. I'm going to check it out. And also, then you were texting me about it, and I was like, okay, now I have to check this out. How about you? How did you find out about this movie?
I forget how I first found out about it, but I heard about it, and I was like, it's a horror movie? I didn't know anything about it. I remember from being a kid that Skinamarink was a song. Skinamarinky dinky dink, Skinamarinky doo, I love you. So it's like, okay, it's a horror movie based on or named after a kid's song. And I saw the poster, which was like barely any information. And then I looked up the trailer, and the trailer is just shots from the film and a voiceover saying, "In this house." And it keeps saying, "In this house," over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that that soundbite is actually from the Exorcist trailer, which is great because the movie has this feel like that. And then it's on Shudder.
It's on Shudder, right. Yeah. So
I watched it and I was like, "What's the hubbub about?" And I have to say, and I know this is going to sound completely hyperbolic, it's the most scared I've ever been watching a movie ever.
Mm.
I think
that's saying something.
I think it's the scariest movie I've ever seen. And what's funny is there's this weird reaction that people have. It's a dual reaction. Some people say it's the scariest movie they've ever seen. And some people say this movie's boring. Nothing happens. I'm bored. And it's hard to argue with that. Because typically when I would argue with somebody over their taste in a film, it would be like intellectual. I would intellectually explain why they're wrong. But in fact, my feelings about this film, as intellectual as they may be, are more visceral. It's more of a feeling. The feeling, the experience of watching Skinamarink is, I think, genuinely terror. The first time I watched it, I turned the volume down. I was looking at my phone. I was literally covering my eyes like a kid. I was pausing and like taking breaks and being like, okay, all right, we're gonna get back into it. because it's just so thick with terrifying atmosphere and tension. It's just tension, tension, tension.
You know, I've had two feelings about this movie, which is first, after I watched it, I started trying to find articles about it, because I was trying to process exactly what I've seen. I was like, there's something about this that feels so familiar, but it's also, I've never seen a movie like this, so why does it feel familiar?
Right.
And it kind of clicked with me, because like, maybe a quarter of the way in, my partner came in and just sat on the couch with me, and she was playing video games, but then as she like started looking, and she was like, oh, I'm actually paying attention to this movie. And she was like, this is exactly what it felt like being a little kid up by yourself at
Yes.
night, and everything looks and sounds completely different during the day. And I
Right.
was like, that's it. That's absolutely it.
Right. It
One artifact,
transports you. It
it
transports you to
yeah.
childhood.
I think it really, yeah, it kind of, I've never felt that before either. Like anything nostalgic or lovely, it's like, it's nice to revisit, but I never felt like I was really transported, and that made me feel like a little kid. And I think
Yeah.
that is what you talk about, what you're referring to is like, it's terrifying
Yes.
because you don't know what's going on. And I wrote some notes to try to like pull it together. And a lot of my notes are really just, this is what's happening. And then
Yeah.
here's some questions I have.
Sure,
But the
yeah.
movie does not give you any answers.
No. There's a lot of fan theories, and some of them are interesting. There's a you can try to piece together a narrative. There's sort of a narrative, but its power is in its experience. And
Yes.
for me, the what I felt like is it reminded me of having nightmares as a little kid.
Yeah, that too.
Because when you're a little kid, your nightmares are all about the little world. You know, when you're a kid, you have this little world, and it's those comfortable things taken away. Like in this film, the parents disappear. Right, that's when the stars of this film are a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And we should say trigger warning because this movie is very triggering because it deals with violence and abuse towards children, and we're going to talk about that.
I mean, indirectly though, and we're gonna get into it, but it's just like you still don't know what's going on. You see things, and the camera will be straight on something, and you're still not. It still took me like 30 seconds to process what I'm seeing
Right.
and feeling, and all together, it's just bizarre. I read an article, and one quote was like, "This movie is like if David Lynch directed Poltergeist." And I
That's
was
it.
like, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, this is like what David Lynch would do if he was a student, if he was still a student. Like, I
Yeah,
feel like
yeah,
this is
yeah.
something grad students would study.
Yeah, sure. It is not in any way a typical, it doesn't register a narrative in a typical way. There's sort of some dialogue, but not a lot. We really never get a good look at the characters' faces. We're kind of always in their POV, although not always exactly in their POV, but you always kind of feel like you're inside that space.
Yeah, that's another thing though. It's like when the movie starts out, we're like, so if you think of like the rule of thirds, the
Yeah.
movie's either we're in the bottom or the top. We're not in the middle. I've never
Yeah.
experienced that before. So like sometimes I think the movie starts and we're actually on the floor,
Yeah.
and we see the main one of the main characters, who we later learn is named Kevin, who's four.
Yeah.
But then a lot of shots are up on the ceiling, which is like, that's
Right.
not a little kid POV.
Well,
But then we, yeah.
unless you're laying down looking up.
That's true. That's a good point. But then we also have camera POV, where the camera's moving like when the children are
Right,
walking around.
with an actual subjective, like we're seeing through their eyes.
Yeah, it happens so seamlessly too. It's
Right.
I like again, I haven't seen a lot of movies that kind of shift between that, and then it doesn't feel wrong, or it doesn't feel heavy-handed.
Yeah.
It's like a natural flow.
Right. This movie is written and directed by a young guy named Kyle Edward Ball, who began as a YouTube artist. He had a YouTube channel where people would send him nightmares that they had, and he would make short films out of their nightmares.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
And one nightmare that a lot of people kept saying to him that he saw repeat over and over again was, "You're a kid and your parents are missing. You can't find your parents, and it's dark at night." So he started to believe, like, that's got to be something very, very deeply embedded inside of our psyches. And he first did a half-hour short film version of this movie called Heck. And Hackett, it's basically like a proof of concept film. Skinamarink is 100 minutes. It's a feature length. Hack is only 30 minutes, but it's very, very, it's basically doing the same thing with some slight differences. And I will later on, we'll get into some of the differences that's in Hack and in Skinamarink. But I think the thing to understand about this is that what we're seeing here is not coming out of a cinematic tradition. It's coming out of a YouTube tradition. It's coming out of a digital arts tradition. And that's not to take anything away from this filmmaker. I think this filmmaker does have a sort of revolutionary eye, but at the same time, he's not completely out of nowhere. He's coming from, you know, his lineage is from things like creepypastas and liminal space videos and liminal space photography that became big on the internet, and Slenderman videos and things like that. They actually have a name for this genre, which is analog horror.
I like the sound of that.
Right. And what's interesting is it calls to mind the medium, but of course, really, it's digital media that these films are made on, but it's made to look like analog media. The film takes place in 1995. It says at the very beginning, 1995. There's a title that says 1995. And you see, in every image, you see like film grain, but also at the same time, it also looks like video noise. And when I say noise, I mean visual noise.
Like snow.
Right,
like,
right, yeah. Right, which is similar to film grain. And that's interesting, which is when you're watching this, and in some, it's in some ways filmic or cinematic, and in some ways it's very video, but that's okay because for a younger audience, that doesn't matter. It's all analog. It's all the past. So who cares if it's both, if this movie is both, you know, film and video at the same time? It's completely harkening back to something. It's almost like the way they used black and white to mean the past for so long in color film history. Mm-hmm. I wonder if like the past now will be things like this. You know, VHS looking things.
You know, I remember years ago, when I was adjuncting, and when I was talking to a professor, and she was not that much older than me, but she was like, you know, I had a student come up to me, and we were in a media class, and this had to be like 6 years ago now, and she was like, and the student was like, oh, you know, my grandma has one of these things, and it's like a box, and you put it in. She's talking about a videotape.
Wow.
It's like, and
yeah.
And like, that was so ancient to the student, right? Of course. So, and now, you know, you and me, we're getting older. We're having our grays. The stuff we grew up with is ancient. Right. It's ancient to these new people.
Right. Although in some places now, they're back in a cool kitsch way. Right, like now they're like people who collect VHSs, and, you know, and collect vinyls and things like that. But yeah, it's, you know, like in a sort of Marshall McLuhan medium is the message way. The media of the time you live in really changes the way you think. So the sort of tactile nature of analog media, I think, really comes through in this film in a way that digital media isn't. Like, digital media is just ethereal. You know, you stream it, it's there and it's gone. You can't really hold it in your hand. But this has, as you're watching the film, there's a sense that there's something really there. There's an aura there. Besides the visuals, also we hear a sort of room tone noise throughout the whole film. There's no there's no score. There's no, the only music you hear is diegetic music of cartoons, public domain cartoons that are being played on a VHS on a TV that are kind of running throughout the whole film in a sort of very eerie, uncanny way. But other than that, when there are moments where you don't hear the video, you hear that sort of static sound. This movie is great because it allows you to hear silence and see darkness. It's a dark, silent movie in a house with no lights, yet you see it. And you hear it.
And, you know, now that you mention it, if I'm not mistaken, like, every sound in this movie is diegetic, as in it's a part of the film's world. ever, like, I can't recall anything that is meant to manipulate us in any way. Like, even the sound, like, I wrote a lot of the sounds, and, like, at the start of the movie, it's, and you see this toy later at the end of it, where it's, like, one of those plastic tape recorders.
Yes.
And it plays tapes, and you hear the chunk when you click on, click off, and I was like, I know that sound. I haven't heard it in 30 years, but I know. Chunk, chunk, click, click, and you hear the TV going on and off, and
the
everything
flashlight going
is
on and off.
It's a flat, even the light switches, like, it's so quiet, you can hear the light switches go on and off.
Or their little feet, like, on the carpet, you hear that too. I mean, or him playing with Legos, it's so tactile. There is a few moments, though, that I do think you do hear something non-diegetic, but there are moments where I feel like the medium breaks. There are a couple of jump scares where you hear sounds that actually sound like technical sounds. Like, there's a moment where there's a sort of jump scare where the mother is in the closet. She goes into the closet, and then she sort of throws her hand out and grabs the door, and you hear a beep, like a boop, which sounds like if you were watching a video and the video stopped or the tape broke.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, that's so weird.
There are a couple of jump scares in this, but they compared to, like, the jump scares you think of with most horror movies, they're just subtle little things, because this movie's so nuanced and languid and subtle that, like, you know, a light switch at one point is like a jump scare, like a tick, and you're like, oh shit. Like, any little thing like that can send you, because you're like, oh my God. You're so drawn to it. You're looking at it so hard. You know, there's so much darkness, and you're looking at the visual noise, and you're going, is there an image there? Is there a thing there? What am I seeing?
You know, also to note, there's some point, now that you mention it, I'm remembering, there's some points when you hear that kind of monster voice.
Yeah.
It literally sounds like a man is talking on a microphone, and you can hear the microphone kind of, I don't have the vocabulary, but you can hear almost like
an electric
echo.
Kind of.
Yeah,
like
or
reverberation.
Yeah, but almost like he was talking too close to it, and I think that was intentional. And that makes it even weirder, because you're like, okay, but what could that possibly be? Because we've not introduced to anything like that the entire movie. And this movie goes so slow, like you said, so languid. It's like it's as almost as slow as like a Chantal Ackerman movie, right? It's like just, and you're just sitting there, and you're waiting, and in that waiting and in that strangeness, it pulls you in, because we're not being manipulated by, like, you know, scary music or loud music. And that's when actually the jump scares become more effective, is this whole movie you're just sitting there, and it's slow, slow, and then it goes really fast, and then it just slows down again.
Yeah.
And it's like keeping you in the screen. Like, it's not one of those movies where you can stop paying attention to look at your phone, because I feel like what I felt watching this is like, I felt like I was going to miss something, so I didn't want to look at my phone. And I never experienced that before, because in a traditional horror movie sense, you could not really pay attention and still get the whole story.
Yeah,
because it's all, a lot of horror is plot driven. So it's like, okay, you missed one scene, but you could hear, and you know who's, you know, whatever's going on.
Right, there's dialogue. You can piece it together. I mean, basically what you have throughout this film is images or camera setups, compositions that are just looking at inanimate images, like looking at a hallway, looking at a couch, looking at a TV, looking
at
at
a
stairs, looking at a window. And you might see the feet of the kids, or you might see like the back of their head at some point, but they're not the subject, almost, the way the house is. And it almost has a very voyeuristic feel, because sometimes you can't even really hear what the kids are saying. There's subtitles sometimes on some of the dialogue. And then there's, you know, there are moments where there's only subtitles and there's no sound. It's like it trains you to be reading the subtitles. But then at some point, and I didn't notice this till the second time I watched it, I was like, there's actually no sound here. The only information that's coming to us is coming through the subtitles.
But then that forces you to pay attention more because
Right,
you're like
it's more
waiting.
in.
Yeah, you're waiting for the subtitles, but then they're not there sometimes. And there's no pattern. It just.
Right. Sometimes they're not there at all. Sometimes they are there. And then there are some times where you really can't hear what's being said, and you're like, "Well, I wish I had subtitles now," but it doesn't give it to you.
Yeah, and I turn my captions off on my television because I feel like it's just the entire space is so important.
Right.
And I get when people, what you said that some people found this movie really boring because it is boring, but it's boring in a really interesting way.
Right.
I think we a lot of times we use boring as a negative connotation, but I think like, you're using the term like languid. It's just so slow and it
Yeah.
just kind of washes over you, like slow, like molasses washes over you. And there are things I couldn't catch because I turned my captions off, and I tried to pick it up the second time I watched it, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I don't know what was said
Yeah,
because it was
yeah.
just like a loud whisper.
Yeah. And then there's also jump cuts. There are scenes where it's not totally clear what's happening or where things are in space. You know, it's a vibe. I
It's
think if you're the kind of consumer of media where you're looking just for sort of traditional narrative, if you go into this, you kind of have to buy into what it's going to give you, because if you sort of resist it from the get-go, you'll create a distance between yourself and it, and you'll be watching yourself watch it, and you'll be like, ah, there's no story here, there's nothing here, which I think could lead to that, oh, you're bored thing. But if you don't act like you're smarter than the movie, or if you don't completely like just disagree with the movie right away and just sort of go with it, just keep your eyes trained on it, it will take you to a very, very scary place. I mean, we think a lot about like horror movies, right? And like there's this thing in horror where people say like, well, jump scare movies aren't really good. Like movies like Insidious or Conjuring, those aren't really scary movies because the only thing that scares you is jump scares. I think that's a little glib. I think that if it's going to make you jump and be afraid, that's valuable. But at the same time, I understand why people see that as quote unquote cheap. This film, although it has a few jump scares, this film is all about genuine dread. You feel prolonged fear. There's no, oh, what's going to happen? And oh, I'm scared. And now we're giggling and the tension is released. It's a pressure cooker where the dread keeps going and going. My heart was literally racing in a way that it's never raced before in a movie where I literally was like, I'm going to have a fucking heart attack from this
Whoa.
goddamn movie because I am so genuinely terrified by what I am seeing. And it's reminding me of being a little kid and being scared, which is the most kind of scared you could ever be, because the whole world is bigger than you. You have no agency. You have nowhere to defend yourself. And when something's scary to you, like the dark or a grown up that you don't know, it's the scariest thing in the world. You feel like the whole world is over.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then like the people that are meant to protect you, mom and dad, they disappear. Dad disappears like what, 20 minutes into the movie?
Yeah.
And then mom later disappears too. Granted, where was she a lot of this movie?
Right. I mean, that's another like thing that fans wonder about in terms of narrative, which is there's no mom in the beginning, and then the father disappears, and at one point one kid says to the other, it's also hard to tell what kid's talking. One kid says to the other, maybe dad went with mom. And then the other kid says, I don't want to talk about mom. And at one point, mom appears, but from the back, we don't see her face. So there are all these fan theories of like maybe the mom is dead and something to do with that. And or some people see this in a, and I think this is maybe too easy, but some people see this whole film as simply a visual metaphor for child abuse, that it's about children being abused and being
Oh.
abused inside their own homes and how that feels. I think that's a compelling idea. I don't know if I would shrink down the whole experience to that one idea, but it's a compelling idea.
Oh, huh. I mean, that's interesting. I don't know, I feel like I have to like digest that. I actually wrote a few theories myself because
Yeah.
there is a moment before Dad disappears, like right before Dad disappears, you hear him on the phone,
Yes.
and he's talking about oh man, did I write it down?
One of
Like,
his, Kevin, the younger boy, falls down the stairs.
right, and he's yeah, so he's talking about Kevin falls down the stairs and he's or something, and then that's when Dad disappears, and you're wondering like what that is.
Yeah.
I actually wondered if the entire movie was just Kevin having a concussion.
That's possible because to jump ahead, the very, very last image is this very spectral image of a blurry face, almost indecipherable, undistinguishable face in the composition. And as frightening as that is, it could be waking up, couldn't it? Right? It could be waking up in a hospital.
Yeah, but I mean it's so hard to tell. It's just a
Yeah.
face, and I think if I'm not mistaken, or I might be mixing this up, but wasn't it a face telling Kevin to go to sleep?
Yes, it the face appears and then it says go to sleep and then Kevin says what's your name? What's your name? And then it ends.
Okay, yeah. So, and I feel like there's a couple of times where that happens, where like someone's saying go to sleep and we
Yeah,
don't know who
the
that
monstrous
is.
voice is telling them to go to sleep.
Yeah, but then also the monstrous voice is compelling them to do some sort of violence, whatever
Right.
that is.
It's like they're being It's like these little children are being tortured by
Right.
a evil sort of specter or an evil entity.
Right. Which could, yes, be a metaphor for child abuse, but it could
Right.
also be some a figment of a child's imagination. It could be a nightmare. It also made me feel like, have you ever had what do they call those? You know those nightmares where you can't really
Yeah,
move?
lucid dreams. Is that it?
Yeah, no, I
No,
think lucid dreams,
sleep
sleep
paralysis.
paralysis. Yeah, I think lucid dreaming is when you know you're dreaming and you can
Right.
control what's
Sleep
happening.
paralysis is when you're sort of stuck between asleep and awake, and you're aware of your body, you not being able to move your body.
Yeah, I used to get that a lot growing up.
Right.
And that this movie made me feel like that. Not that we
Yeah.
saw that happen to these kids, but it really felt like those nightmares I used to have where I couldn't move and I had no control.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to have a recurrent, this is so stupid now, but so I used to watch the Goosebumps anthology series on
Sure.
Nickelodeon, and they had one about Slappy the Dummy, which was like a ventriloquist doll that does evil shit.
Oh, I know Slappy.
Oh yeah. I used to have a recurring nightmare that Slappy was coming for me, and
Sure.
I was stuck in my bed, and I could hear his little feet pitter-pattering on the hallway, and I
Yeah.
knew he was coming, but I could, and I, for some reason, I knew it was a doll. I don't know why. But then that was my recurring nightmare, and then right before he would come get me, I'd wake up, and that happened over and
Yeah.
over again. And this movie made me feel like that. Like it felt so powerless and frightened, and I know that there's something horrible, but I don't really know why it's coming for me.
One of the earliest nightmares I can remember was I used to every night around like the same time in the middle of the night get up and like want to drink. But I was afraid of the dark, so I would like wake up my mother and she would walk with me into the kitchen and like I'd get a drink and then I'd go back to bed. And this happened like every night in my childhood. But I had a dream where I got up on my own and I didn't wake my mother up for some reason. And I was going to the bathroom. And the way that my home when I was a kid looked was when you went to the bathroom, you passed the kitchen and there was, a table there. And I looked to my right towards the kitchen and it was all dark, but I can see a person sitting at the table. Eating cereal, and they had a cereal box in front of their face, and then they lowered the box, and they just had crazy eyes and like spiky hair, like a fucking Tim Burton shit, and it was so scary to me. And this movie reminds me of that dream, just making your home this uncanny place. You said it earlier, when you're a little kid, when darkness falls and it's nighttime. Everything's different. Everything's foreign. Everything's dangerous. Everything is scary.
Right, absolutely.
Let's I'm sorry.
Everything's. Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say, and everything sounds, even normal sounds, like that this movie does really well. Just the clicking on and off, the
Yeah.
moving of the toys. Everything sounds scary.
Yeah.
You even when you recognize what that is, it's still terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Go
I think
on.
let's go through the narrative because I believe we can go through pretty quickly. It begins, its opening credits are very much like 70s credits, where like it'll have the copyright under the title when the title appears, and it'll have like, director of photography, dot 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 name. So it feels like older film credits. And then the film begins. I'm just gonna explain the narrative as I understand it. You might understand it as differently. You've got two little kids, a boy and a girl, Kaylee and her younger brother, Kevin. They live in a house with their dad. Kevin falls down the stairs and hurts his head, but he's okay. They go to sleep. Kaylee wakes up in the middle of the night and she goes into her dad's room and her dad's not there and she can't find her dad. She wakes up her little brother, Kevin, and they look around and the windows and doors have disappeared. And there's some cool shots where the window will like appear for a second and then disappear again, like it's blinking in and out. They decide because they're scared, they're gonna go hang out in the living room and bring some blankets onto the couch and like make a little like snug place in the living room and watch a VHS of cartoons, public domain cartoons.
Right.
And that's interesting too, because it makes you think about how you use media to soothe yourself. And more and more strange stuff starts to happen. They go upstairs, they hear a noise upstairs, so they go upstairs and they see that like a Barbie doll is like stuck to the ceiling and they don't know why, and it falls and it's a little bit like a jump scare. And then they go back downstairs, the toilet disappears, so they go and they pee in buckets at one point. They go to
Right.
sleep and they wake up again, and Kaylee hears a noise, a voice that says, "Come upstairs." And it's like it whispers, but it's not like, "I'm Skeletor." It's like spooky, but it's like, "Come upstairs."
Yeah.
It's like whispering and breathy. And this is one of the scariest sequences. She goes upstairs into her parents' room, and it's her point of view. It's all dark, and she sees her father at the edge of the bed, sitting still. We don't see his face. And then the dad says, "Look under the bed." And then she looks slowly under the bed. And I'm waiting, right, for something horrible to happen, and nothing happens. And then she comes back up and she says, "I didn't see anything." So then she looks again, and I'm like, "Oh my God, we're doing this again." And still nothing happens. It's like blue balls. You know what I mean? Like, I'm waiting for this jump scare to actually alleviate some of this tension, and it never comes. Twice they look under a dark bed in a dark room in a haunted house, and we see nothing. And both times it's terrifying. But then when she comes back up from the second time looking under the bed, dad has disappeared, but we now see mom, and we see the mom's back. And mom's speaking very weird. She's saying, "We love you. We love you and your brother." And then she says, "Honey, I need you to do something for me. I need you to close your eyes for a second." So she does. And then when she opens her eyes, mom's gone. And you get the sense that mom is going into the closet. And I spoke about this before. We hear like a weird, like bone cracking noise, like something's happening in the closet to mom. And her hand comes out, and there's a little bit of a jump scare. And then we're back downstairs, and Kevin's like, "What did you see upstairs?" And she's like, "Never mind." She does something very, very sweet where she gets Kevin a glass of orange juice. She's like, "Here, I got you some juice," which is like a 6-year-old's way of taking care of a 4-year-old. It's some point it, when it's terrifying, but when you really think about it, it's a very sad narrative because they're such cute, sweet little children. Then Kaylee hears, "Come down to the basement." So she goes downstairs and it's all dark and we lose her. It cuts away from her. And then I believe Kevin hears, "Come into the basement," and he goes into the basement. And we get probably the biggest jump scare where he finds his sister, but she has no eyes or mouth. And that's the last time we see her. And then he goes upstairs and he's watching the tape. But now, like, more and more toys are moving on their own. Things are sticking to the wall. There's a chair that's now upside down on the ceiling. Lights are going on and off on its own. The videotape is pausing and rewinding on its own. He starts to hear the voice, and the voice tells him to go to sleep at some point. So he goes to sleep, and then he wakes up, and it's still dark. And geez, what happens then? And then there's gosh, it gets so like muddy around this period. Oh, at one point the little girl says, "Why is mom crying? And why has no one come yet?" Oh, a snake toy on the floor disappears, and the video pauses. You get the idea that whatever the entity is, it has full control over everything in the house. The voice says, "I want to play." And then the voice says, "Put a knife in your eye." And we cut to like the hallway, and we hear Kevin crying hysterically because he's stabbed himself in the eye, or the entity made him do that. And then we see blood on the floor.
But we don't even know if he stabbed himself. And the thing that confused me is there's blood. And we heard the voice, and Kevin's crying. But we, of course, like you've mentioned, we never see these kids face on. So we don't really know. And also, I feel like if you're stabbing yourself in the eye, like where? If it's breaking your eyeball, that would be ungodly painful. So he has some composure. I'm not saying that, we're wrong or anything. It's just a lot of this movie is very kind of dreamlike
I
kind of
agree,
thing.
yeah. Right. I have a theory about that,
Okay.
which is I think that he does do it, but then I think that the entity can rewind the house. The house itself is a medium. The house itself is a videotape.
Okay.
Especially at the end, you see things repeat a lot. I think he does stab himself in the eye, but then I think it's rewound and that injury's gone.
Interesting.
But again,
That
that's
would
just a
make
theory.
sense. That would make sense though, because the blood rewinds and hits over and over again
Yeah,
later
yeah.
on. Yeah.
He
And
then tries. Yeah, I'm sorry.
oh, sorry. No, I was gonna say it even sounds like almost like rewinding
Yeah.
of a tape or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, weird. So continue.
He calls 911 and he gets an adult, and we barely hear what anyone's saying, but we see the subtitles on the screen, and the adult's like, "What's happening? Where are your parents?" And he's like, "They're not here." And he's like, "What's wrong?" And he says, "I got cut and I'm sick." And the 911 guy's like, "Be a brave, you gotta be a brave little boy for me. We're gonna send a grown up over." And then for some reason that I don't quite understand what happens, Kevin drops the phone. And we see a sequence of shots where like there's a darkness at the end of the hallway, and it keeps cutting into it, like not zooming in one image, but like it keeps cutting to a closer to the nothing. We're like cutting in on nothing. And then when we go back, there's a toy phone. I've heard some people say, I've read a lot of good reviews about this and good theories about this, and also seen a lot of good YouTube video analyses of this and good video essays about this, which I'd say check it out. But one, I've heard before that some people say that the phone that he had, the real phone, turns into the toy phone. I think that that's a leap, which is fine. There's such dissonance in this movie that you have to fill in the gaps. But then the toy phone's there. There's actually a really interesting thing where when he's talking to the 911 guy, the 911 guy says, "Why are you whispering? Is there someone in the room with you?" And it's funny because it's kind of like something that I was thinking the whole time, which is, why are they whispering? At no point do they ever stop whispering. It's like they're still like, we're little kids and it's dark, and like there's something we don't want to upset. It's nighttime. We can't really be awake and alive. You know what I mean? We're whispering. So he then gets the flashlight. He goes upstairs. I think he's upside down now. We see his point of view, and he's like on the ceiling walking towards a bedroom. He sees like all of his toys are now like on the ceiling. At one point, he asks, "How did you do that?" And then the voice says, "I can do anything. Kaylee didn't do as she was told, and she wanted her mom and dad, so I took her mouth away."
Oh yeah, that was spooky.
Yeah. Then the voice tells him to come upstairs, although you don't hear it. You just see subtitle that says, "Come upstairs." Then we see something that's really, really interesting that a lot of people in when they're talking about this film talk about it. I want to know your feelings on it. We see a title slowly fade onto the screen that says 572 days. It doesn't say 572 days later. It doesn't say day 572. It just says 572 days. In its vagary, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think the way that most of us read it is that he's in some sort of perpetual nightmare that's not ending. But still, just to say it like that is very weird. Because, and listen to this, if you watch the short film Heck, they do a similar thing that's much more clear, where in that film, it'll cut to a title that says One Sleep Later, and then there'll be more stuff, and then it'll say Three Sleeps Later, Four Sleeps Later, and then by the end of the film, it's like 6,000 sleeps later, which would be like 50 years. And then the end of that film, the little boy says, I think we're in hell, and then that's the end of the movie. And it's the movie's called Heck. Because in that movie, it seems very clear that it's about a kid in hell. Mm. Whereas this, I think, is kind of like that, but there might be more going on. I'm not sure. At one point, we see the sister again, but she slowly, slowly disappears. I mean, like, very slowly. You just see her from behind, like, in the distance, and then she just sort of, like, fades away. And then we see pictures on the wall of the family, and the kids don't have faces, and the people are fading away, and he's clicking the flashlight on and off. Something very scary happens where he clicks the flashlight off and we see spooky, scary eyes, and then he clicks it on again and it's the eyes of that toy phone, but then it rings loudly and it scares the shit out of you. And then he's on the ceiling, we see blood splatter, and then it rewinds, and then it splatters again, and then it rewinds. We see a door floating in darkness. It seems as if the house completely comes apart. In the end, there's almost nothing but darkness. He's almost like in a void. And then it ends with that barely visible face, which could, I mean, it looks humanoid. It could be the mother, but it seems to be speaking as if it's the entity. And then it says the end. That's the whole narrative. And I've made some leaps there because, you know, that's the way our minds work. We put narratives together. But that's basically what happens. That doesn't necessarily sound like an hour and a half movie, but it's not really about the story.
No, it's more about, like, experience of cinema. You just let it wash over you. Don't try to make sense of it. I think that's, like, it's kind of like watching experimental film. Like, you can't make sense of a Maya Deren movie. You just let it happen and just absorb what's being given to you.
Yeah.
And I mean, us talking about it and trying to break things down and like the fan theories, that is the fun exercise. Yeah. But you're never going to come to an answer.
No. No,
there's
want to, right?
Nah, not really. I don't need an answer.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I'm fine with questioning because I feel like it just gives you more opportunity to explore.
I'll quote something that I've said multiple times on the show, and that's fine because we're almost at 300 episodes and how much do I really have to say? But I love a quote from the poet Billy Collins. He said when he teaches poetry to students, his students have a tendency to want to tie a poem to a chair and beat it with a hose until it reveals its secrets. and that's part of what criticism can do. You try to, you know, and I've felt like this in my past, like even doing this podcast, I've had episodes where I'd be like, I have to, in this episode, say exactly what I feel and explain what this thing is, because right now it's this nebulous nothing. And I, with my critical mind, must tame it and make it tangible. And, you know, it's a fool's exercise. Because really, we could talk forever about this movie. And still, it will never get to really represent the experience of seeing it. Because seeing it is seeing it. And it's experiencing it. And there's so much texture here. There's so much that's not describable. Just the way things look and the way things feel. And how, you know, long shots where seemingly nothing happens, but there's a lot happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that this movie kind of reminded me of in a really different way is there's an art installation in Santa Fe, New Mexico called Meow Wolf. And I think they have a couple of other ones around the country. So Meow Wolf is an immersive art installation. You pay like $50 and you just wander through all these rooms, and there are narratives, like a bunch of different narratives, and you can sit there and digest it. Like, I know this is hard to explain, like, verbally, but basically, when you enter the experience, there's a house. So you're looking at, like, a suburban house.
Yeah.
But you're in a, like, a huge warehouse kind of thing.
Right.
But it's made to look like a suburban house, and you go through the house. But as you, like, notice things about the house, it's weird. Like, things don't, like, it looks like a house, but then, like, there's a television screen, and it's just looping on this, like, kind of music videos that don't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And they're not within reality. And as you go through stuff, there's actually a narrative of a family and a father who's a scientist who found a way to, like, go through different dimensions. And then you're trying to figure out, like, what exactly happened. And you can go through his office and go on his computer and you can read his journal. There's secret passageways, like you can go in something that comes up on social media a lot is when you go into the kitchen, which is like a regular kitchen, but when you open drawers, there's like, you know, it's like you're looking in a black hole. And ooh, when you open the fridge, it's an amazing experience. And I would say if anyone ever ends up in New Mexico, go pay to see it, because you can spend 3 hours there just wandering around in all these different rooms.
When you open the fridge, what happens?
You go through the fridge and you go into another world. And basically,
okay, I think I've seen this on TikTok, like that specific thing.
Yeah. I've definitely put up some stuff on Instagram too when I've been there. And you can also go through like the staircase and the fireplace, and they all end up, and you go like around the house and you're in this futuristic setting. And it's just like, it's bizarre. So like you're in modern time, like two-story house, and then you go through and then you're in the future, and it's like, oh, these are like space vacations. And then you can go in and you can go to a like a dinosaur kind of land where there's like this giant plastic dinosaur bones, and you can play them like a xylophone.
Wow.
There's a room that looks, the way they painted it, everything looks like a two-dimensional old-timey cartoon. So it's 3D, but it's because of the visual effect, you look like you're in two dimensions. It's really
That's
freaky.
Incredible. That's awesome.
That's only a few. There's a bunch of other rooms. They also have like music events there and stuff too. It's bananas.
Wow.
But this is what that movie reminded me of, is because you're looking at something normal, but then the more you look at it, the more you know something's wrong, and it's bizarre, and it just sucks you in that way.
It's truly the definition of uncanny,
yeah.
Right? It's the familiar that's made unfamiliar. You know, what's more familiar than your own home? I mean, really, for such an amazing film, it's just shot in one house. And I believe it's the actual childhood home of the director.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So it's like, it's just in a house. How do you make a suburban house terrifying? Just really look at it. Force your audience to stare at it long enough in the dark in ways that you don't normally see it. Look at a carpet that you wouldn't normally stare at. Look at a ceiling that you wouldn't normally stare at. Look at the corner, the ceiling where the walls meet. Look at that. And, you know, or think about things like, what if the windows weren't there? What if you had a bathroom without a toilet? Shit like that.
Oh, it's just so unsettling. And it really looks like someone's house. And I think, like, I was remarking, like, just all the toys everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, my parents would never let us leave toys everywhere, but I remember going to other people's houses and there's just Legos and dolls and stuffed animals. And that's just like the chaos of having a 4 or 5 family
right.
member household, and just not being able to keep up with things.
Yeah.
And what do you think about near the end of the movie?
Yes.
Where they're kind of closing in and there's just all those toys.
Yeah.
Like in like a, almost like a pyramid pile.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like slowly cut for some reason, like cutting closer and closer to it, but there's nothing happening. Like what? I can't, you know, I don't know. I feel like it's almost fruitless to say, what do you think that meant? Or was just unsettling.
Yeah. There's that whole, at the end, it's like I said, it feels like everything's coming apart. You know, like, I feel like if there's one word to describe this whole movie, it's dissonance. You know, and if film is anything, right, it's different parts coming together to make a whole. This movie is all about keeping parts separate. And then I think as the film goes on, it's more and more of that. And the image that you're talking about, which I believe is also the poster, is just these toys, right? And what's more mundane and nothing, you know, what's more anodyne than children's toys? But they're stacked in a weird way and upside down and in a corner as if somebody took a whole house and turned it upside down. And then, by the way, we see a shot of an upside down house. And I, to me, it's not clear if this is just another dollhouse, a toy, or if it's the one shot in the whole movie that's actually outside of the space. And that's what the house looks like on the outside. It's very unclear.
Yeah, but then it's also, there's nothing else. It's like someone took a house and just put it in some other dimension where it's just floating in space.
It's like all of existence is disappearing.
Yeah, and that's another thing. It's like, is this like, are things just disappearing? So like in that Meow Wolf example I gave you, there, when you read the journals and look through things, stuff and people disappear. And they come back, or they come back and they're different, or something like that. And that's what was making me think about is like, cause that happens in this movie too. It's like things disappear and reappear, and then sometimes they disappear for good, like static shots of the window, and then the window disappears.
Yes.
And there's one with one of the public domain cartoons with this rabbit who's doing like magic tricks, and he's making himself disappear and then reappear. And it's just like rewinding and forwarding. And then you're getting into this and you're like, okay, why are we watching this cartoon? But it's important, right? And then when he makes himself disappear, there's a jump cut and then something else disappears in the room.
Right.
It's like he's, the director's like playing with you. Like the voice is playing with those kids.
Right. The entity is playing with them. That's why somebody made an amazing parody on YouTube. I sent it to you, of like, and it's called like cutout scene or edited scene from Skinamarink, and they really aped the style really well. It's a wall and there's like someone painted a tunnel on it, and you see like paint cans that say like Acme paint, and then the voice is like, Kevin, run into the tunnel as fast as you can. And it's hilarious because it's what it looks so like it could fit in the movie, but it really is kind of what the entity is doing, just torturing these little kids in these ridiculous ways. Like, I'm gonna paint a tunnel and ask you to run at it.
like a Looney Tunes.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what it's doing.
Yeah. You know, when you brought up earlier Heck and how like this movie is somehow more esoteric and confusing, it kind of reminded me of reading about The Shining when Kubrick took the theatrical version and personally cut it for television, and he intentionally made it more confusing.
Yeah, I've also heard like the original cut's like 7 hours or something insane like that. Like, I want to see that, but I think he probably doesn't exist. I think he would like literally destroy his films. Like, he didn't want anyone else to fuck with it.
He seems like a nut like that. But yeah, 572 days. Of Kevin. Right. What does that mean?
Right. It's so. Why is it written in such a weird way?
Yeah, and we'll never get an answer.
No.
Oh my god.
I mean, of course, like it seems what it expresses on a basic level is a lot of time passing. It's just weird. It's weird because it does. It's not like it says like 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. You know what I mean? Like, it just, there's no other credit in the middle except that one title that says 572 days. It comes out of nowhere. But it's also chilling because you realize, because when before I saw that, I thought it was one night. You know what I mean? I thought it was a long night. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't think it's like this forever. I mean, to think about like how tense it is and how little they are, and if they're really going through it forever, what a horrible, God, what a true nightmare, right?
Truly hell. Like, just absolutely chilling.
Where do you think, and again, this is a narrative question, so there isn't an answer, but I'm just interested in your thoughts. What do you think is going on with Mom? Is Mom dead? Is Mom not there? Is she divorced? Why does Kaylee say, I don't want to talk about Mom? What's going on with mom?
The thing is, they don't give us enough to get on, to go on.
Yeah.
But when dad, after dad makes that phone call, you hear a car door slam and drive away. And then you never hear anything like that later. And it makes me think that he left. And I was actually wondering if this movie was also about divorce, because dad was on one side of the bed when Kaylee comes in, right? And telling her to look under the bed. And then he disappeared. And mom's on the other side now. And I'm actually wondering if the parents are kind of switching off or something.
Right. And they're both not looking at her. You can't see their faces. Right. And even what the mother says sounds a lot like what a divorced person would say, right? Me and your father love you both very much.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that doesn't quite sound like a. I mean, it could be an abusive situation, but that sounds more like a parent trying to explain to kids why dad's not around, or whoever. Right. And,
you know, you have a broken home, so to speak. Like, literally, the house is coming apart. It could be just, you know, divorce.
The scariest divorce movie ever, besides Cronenberg's The Brood, I guess. Yeah.
In the short film version, Heck, which you can find for free on YouTube, it's one kid and his mother disappears, which is a much more, I think, primal thing, your mom disappearing. But the film has two kids, which is fine, but it's dad who disappears. And mom's sort of not there always, although she kind of appears at the end in some ways. Why do you think it's dad? Why do you think dad's the one we see in the beginning before things get crazy?
I mean, it could be many things. It could be the director wanted to switch it up and make different choices. Sure. It could be like dad is the one that's leaving. Like maybe they're getting divorced and mom's keeping the house. And that's right. And dad was doing his little visitation.
Right, because Kevin says, why is mom crying, right?
Yeah, and they keep looking for dad, which I wondered if that meant it's because dad's the one that's going away a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it could be that maybe mom's not a great parent and dad's the one that takes care of them. Like, there's so many ways we can spin it, but I don't think we'll, as we've repeated, no answers here.
Right. So when I watch it the second time, I kind of was like, well, this isn't going to be scary because I'm sure this experience only really works once because I don't know what's happening at all when I first watch it. But I did find the second time scary because it is so slow moving. You're not exactly sure when something's going to happen. You might be like, oh, yeah, there's a jump scare here. But when exactly is it? And, because it's so abstract, you kind of don't remember everything. So I found that it actually had a rewatchability that I didn't think it would have.
Yeah. And what you mentioned earlier about, you know, those other kind of movies that have a lot of jump scares, I feel like with a lot of jump scares, once you know it's coming, it does lose its effect to an extent.
Right.
But this movie, because it's so bizarre and there's so many slow that sucks you in, I think it does have rewatchability. Absolutely. And it's just so uncanny. I feel like I've noticed things the second time that I didn't the first time.
Right, yeah. I said this was, to me, the most scared I ever was watching a movie. At least as an adult, right? Mm-hmm. As a little kid, I'd be very scared watching movies. How would you rank it in terms of its scariness? Did it scare you? How much did it scare you? Or not at all?
You know, it depends on what you mean by scare. So, like, in the moment, jumping because something unsettling is happening, I would say, like, the few times that happened, that was a good 7-8. Just that constant dread for an hour and a half, 10. I've never had a movie that did that to me
right
so effectively.
Right.
And then, again, the second time, even though I watched it before, it still had that feeling of, like, discomfort that just stays with you.
Yeah, it's whenever I tell people it's the most scared I ever was in a movie. And I won't say it's the scariest movie because it's about my experience. It's the most scared I ever was watching a movie. People raise their eyebrows, even people that have seen the film. And I understand it sounds very, very hyperbolic, but I'm not somebody who doesn't like horror. I've watched a lot of horror, good horror, bad horror. I've read a lot of horror, but you know, if we get like real pedantic or semiotic, what's the difference? The word horror, right? most horror movies don't actually horrify me. They startle me. You know, maybe they make me feel a little anxious. This truly horrified me. I was like, oh God. Like, I had to like I didn't sleep with the lights on, but that night I was like, all right, I'm just gonna like look at my phone until I fall asleep, because I'm a grown-ass man who's like now genuinely made scared of the dark because of this movie.
Yeah, I needed a palate cleanser immediately. Like, I could not go to sleep. And not it's not because I was just too scared of the dark or anything. It's like, I feel kind of shitty. And
yeah, it puts you through the ringer.
Yeah, it puts you through a ringer, and you're like, ugh, I need to, like, just wash this off. So I had to watch, like, really silly shows and stuff just to, like, get into a better place. And weirdly, no, I haven't been scared of the dark. I actually was scared of the dark way longer than any adult should be. Especially when my partner goes away and weird things are happening at night in New Mexico.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing that children understand. You should be scared of the dark. It makes absolute sense to be scared of the dark. It's stupid to not be scared of the dark. If you're an adult and you're not afraid of the dark, that's stupid of you. You don't know what the fuck's in the dark. It's such a normal, natural thing to be scared of the dark. It's crazy to not be.
Okay, all right, that's fair. Because it's really not so much the dark, but the unknown and losing a part of your sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I guess I just thought, like, there have been times as an adult that I didn't think I would be scared in a way when I was as a kid in the dark. But, you know, a lot of weird noises, darkness.
I think we've all had that experience of maybe like you're leaving a room and you have to turn the light off and leave the room. And in the moment between turning the light off and closing the door behind you, you're like, okay, I really got to run now, because when I turn the lights off, that's when the monsters get me. So I just got to or go right into your room or whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I literally saw a TikTok like that the other day where like it was pretty well done. Like, this kid turns the light off and then like, I guess he has his friends with like bald caps on. They all start like running after him. And it's like, yeah, that's what it feels like. Like, yeah, the minute you turn the light out, like that's when they come for you.
And you're only safe in your bed. Yeah. That's where they can't get you.
Naturally. Did you have that phone toy?
You know, I can't recall owning it, but I do remember seeing it a lot. Like, that was a popular toy.
That was a huge toy.
Yeah.
I think you're younger than me. I think maybe it's for older. It was a little bit before your time. I had one, but it wasn't at my house. It was at my grandma's house, my mother's mother's house. It was like one of those toys that existed elsewhere for you.
Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing them at like doctor's offices and stuff like that. You know, like when you go to a pediatrician, they have those little toys to keep you busy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And other people's houses. I remember the eyes moving. Do you remember that? Like, yes, the eyes could move?
I think it has like wheels, and when you push it, the eyes open and close,
and
like,
make that clicking noise.
Yes, yes, yes. It's such a nostalgia button for a certain like age group, because you see that and you're like, oh, that fucking toy.
It's like it's hard to explain, but it's also like that little red car with the yellow roof that I feel like every kid, maybe my age, had at some point, where you just push with your feet and you're just kind of like,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
and you have a little steering wheel.
Yeah,
I can't remember what it's called, but you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, like, yeah. I feel like a lot of kids have that,
something like that.
And for some reason, I'm remembering that little white phone was a Fisher Price toy, and I don't know why I remember that, but it's kind of weird to, it would be weird to explain to younger people. They're like, what the hell are you talking about? I was like, you know, the phone with the face on it that clicks at you.
Nadia, I think we did it. I think we talked about this movie. absolutely see it. Absolutely see it. You know what? See it if you, I said this on my other podcast, Cuckoo Bananas. We were talking about inner child, and I suggested see it for your inner child. If you want to feel like a kid again, this is the way to do it. Watch this movie.
Nadia, not in a good way, but
yeah, yes. Not in a good way. Sure, sure. Horrible way. Nadia, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. We come out every Wednesday. We're almost at episode 300. Look forward to that.
Go bye-bye.